If you were here for my very first sermon at this church, I had the clicker and I wasn't sure how to use it. I was just clicking in the air, and it turned out it was the PowerPoint people at the back who was clicking it for me. excuse me, I do have a bit of a cold that I'm recovering from, so if I cough, don't be alarmed. But yeah, let's get into it. So it's great to be here in this church, which is my church. It's been quite a while since I've actually had the opportunity to speak and preach. And as I was getting ready this morning, I remembered that the last time I spoke was actually not at this church. It was actually last Christmas Day at Nathan's old church, Five Dock. And it just triggered me a little because I remember that was, if you remember, it was a very hot summer's day last Christmas. And I actually, I went to his church and I preached in shorts. And I think it was a bit shocking for some of his congregation to have someone preach in shorts. Yeah, and thongs. Yeah, I apologize. If you know me, you know me. I'm a shorts and thongs and t-shirt guy. So I dressed it up for you guys today. Hope you appreciate it. But yeah, it's actually quite funny being back down here in the main hall because, you know, me and my wife have actually spent the last 3 months in the creche upstairs. Because if you don't know, we had a daughter earlier this year in August. That's my baby. And so, yeah, I've gotten very used to, you know, watching the service from the comfort of the creche. And so I found it quite fitting that I'm talking about peace today, because if it's one thing that all parents learn very quickly, it's just how fragile peace can be. So just to quickly recap the last couple of weeks, today's talk will be the last in our series of Advent, where we've looked forward to Christmas, which is next week, and, you know, the coming of Jesus into our world. So Joe took us through what it is to have a living hope, and then Nathan took us through a love perfected and also a sustaining joy. And today we come to the topic of peace and what I'm going to be calling a complete peace. So before we dive into today's passage, let me just start with a prayer, and then we'll move into it. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, we thank you so much for your goodness. We thank you so much for what this time of year means for us as Christians and for the wider, I guess, Christian community in the world, Lord. As we look towards Christmas and celebrate your son Jesus coming into the world to live and die and save us, Lord, we pray that you remind us of just how great and how significant an act this was. The goodness that he brought into the world through his life, in hope, in love, in joy, and in peace, Lord. We pray that you speak clearly through me today. Pray that you help give me energy through a disturbed night of sleep. Pray that as a congregation, we are keen to hear your word and keen to know you better, Lord. So just pray for this time ahead. I pray that you give us open hearts and open minds to accept you and to know you better, Lord. I just pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Cool. So peace. Peace is an interesting concept, isn't it? It's probably not something that we think about a whole lot, you know, in our day-to-day lives. It might not even be something that you've thought about much at all. But I think as a concept, or as an idea, we can agree that, and we would think that most people would have a similar view or opinion on. Can I get a show of hands if you think peace is a good thing? Yeah, I'm really hoping everyone's hands up for that. Pretty easy question. Anyone who thinks peace is a bad thing? Okay, good. I mean, if you were to go out into the street, go up to strangers and ask them, is peace a good thing? What do you think their answers would be? Of course, it's a good thing, right? If you actually did this and asked them, is peace good? Yes. Is peace important? Yes. Is peace valuable? Yes. You know, is it worth working for? Is it worth striving for? I think the unanimous answer would be yes. If you actually went and did this, I would be very surprised and shocked if anyone thought any differently. You would have to think that they were either not being serious or, you know, there was actually maybe something wrong with them. Like, nobody would think that. So we've kind of established that, you know, as an idea, we can all agree that peace is a good thing. So now let's bring things back down to us again. Raise your hand if you think you have peace. Okay, yeah, more hesitant hands, but that's fine. You know, does anyone want to just shout out, like, for those who put their hands up, like, anyone who wants to say why they feel they have peace? Yes, Tina. Because we have God. Yes, awesome answer. Perfect, yes, exactly. And I think in a Christian circles, that hopefully that is like one of the main factors for why we have peace. Anyone who feels like they don't really have peace or don't have peacefulness in their lives, a bit more controversial, that's okay. I think we could see that, you know, when I asked if we ourselves felt we had peace, there was a bit more of a hesitancy to be like, oh yeah, you know, rather than when we said peace was good. See, that's the tricky thing with peace, right? Conceptually, as an idea, I think we can all agree that it is a good thing. But the reality is that everyone experiences peace or encounters peace differently. There is a subjectiveness to it. There is personal experience that comes into it. And for those of you who put your hands up when I asked if you felt you had peace, I know, Tina, you said, like, because of God. But I'm also guessing that a large factor of why we feel we have peace is that we live in Australia, which is, you know, a relatively peaceful country to be living in, right? As Ben mentioned, you know, that astronaut who was in space, like, looking down into the world, like, there is war and there is stuff that's going on that we know that there's not peace in other places. You know, Australia is very safe in terms of crime. We have low rates of gun violence. We're not actively engaged in any wars, or at least not being impacted domestically, right? High levels of personal freedoms, you know, especially religious freedoms. Being allowed to be gathered here today and, you know, worship together, you know, read the Bible together, sing together. It's not something that every Christian around the world has access to. So there's actually an Institute of Economics and Peace that's actually headquartered in Sydney. They're an independent non-profit think tank, and they release a report each year called the Global Peace Index, which they've been doing for the last 16 years. This report ranks countries on their peacefulness, and they base it on a variety of indicators. And the description that they give to this report, if you can read it on the side there, the GPI, the Global Peace Index, covers 163 countries comprising 99.7% of the world's population. Using 23 qualitative and quantitative indicators from highly respected sources, and it measures the state of peace across three domains: the level of societal safety and security, the extent of ongoing domestic and international conflict, and the degree of militarization. So things, they're the indicators that this organization judges or ranks peace. So you've got things like deaths from external conflict, impact of terrorism, violent demonstrations, access to small arms, refugees, political instability, that kind of stuff. So as a thought exercise for us as a group, I wanted to open it up and test you guys a little bit, and wanted to see if we could try and name the top three and the bottom three countries in this ranking. So it's open. We won't spend too long on this, but it's anyone thinks a country that is either the top three or bottom three in peace, what would those countries be? Australia? Well, you reckon Australia's top three? Okay. Any other countries people want to shout out? New Zealand? Yeah, New Zealand. Fiji? Okay, yep, cool. I'll reveal the answers, don't worry. Switzerland? Interesting, cool. What about bottom three? Russia, Ukraine? Yeah, that's probably, the wars and stuff. Any other countries you guys reckon are in the bottom three? Ethiopia? Cool. So, okay, good mix there. A lot of responses. So, NASA, you said Australia and I'll reveal the top three and bottom three first. So, top three is Iceland, New Zealand, and Ireland. It's pretty interesting. And then the bottom three are Syria, Yemen, and Afghanistan. So, remember, it's based on those indicators that this organization came up with. But it's pretty broad, wide-ranging indicators. So I'll quickly show up the full rankings because I wanted to just point out a few things. So Australia, surprisingly, is actually very respectable, but we're actually 27th. So not as high as we might think. So I'll bring up the full rankings. And what surprised me was actually Australia dropped 9 places since the previous year. So we're in top 20 and then we dropped out of it. So that's a pretty decent drop. So I highlighted countries that I were interested in and then we can look at it. So Iceland, New Zealand, number 2. Number 10, Japan, fairly safe. Canada, 12, also very safe. Australia, 27th. United Kingdom, 34th. Cambodia, 62. That was higher than I thought, actually, because of its violent history, but France, 65, and then this side, China, 89th. United States, where's Joe? 129. It's not too surprising, but being a developed country, it was oh, that's pretty low for USA. India, 135, and then North Korea, Ukraine. Ukraine dropped 17 spots, I wonder why. Russia, and then Afghanistan at the bottom. So, for me, I found this really interesting. If anyone is keen to have a read, the full report is available for free online. I read parts of it, but it's very interesting what they get into. But looking back at these countries, maybe there's some surprises with specific placements of countries, but I think maybe overall, pretty accurate in terms of how we perceive most of these countries, right? So if we look back at these indicators, these measures of peace, if your perception is, tied to these things, then yes, it makes sense for us to say that we live very peaceful lives in Australia. So when we look at the passage today, which we're finally getting to, what do we do with what Jesus says in this verse? In verse 27, he says to his disciples, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you." This gift of peace that he promises to his disciples, and by extension to us as his followers, do we hear this and think, oh, thanks, Jesus, that's really generous of you, but we actually live in Australia. It's the 27th most peaceful country in the world. So all good with the peacefulness. Maybe you can give it to, those people in those other countries that are not as peaceful as us. That's how we react, right? I mean, that's how we are as humans. We don't see the value of a gift if we don't think it's something that we need, if we don't see it as something that we want or something that we're lacking in. Why would we want it if we feel like we already have it? Why would we see it as something important? Our lives are already very peaceful, and so this offer of peace from Jesus doesn't really resonate with us. Maybe for Christians living in countries where there's war, violence, or high levels of persecution, there is a much greater desire for peace. People in Ukraine, in North Korea, in Afghanistan, these lower ranked countries on the peace index. But us, in Australia, we're good, right? So what's happened is we've actually fallen into a trap, and it's a trap that Jesus draws attention to in this passage. Verse 27 says, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives, do I give to you. Not as the world gives." So Jesus knows that there is a type of peace that we can seek and find in this world. The security that can be found in the circumstances of our lives. It's actually a false peace that draws us away from him. And he knows that this peace is nothing in comparison to the peace that he offers. Let's be reminded of who Jesus is when it comes to peace. So in Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6 to 7, I'll just read it out quickly. "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and of peace there will be no end. On the throne of David and over his kingdom, to establish it and uphold it with justice and with righteousness, from this time forth and forevermore, the zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this." So before Jesus was even born, he was already prophesied to be the bringer of peace, the Prince of Peace. This is the guy, right? This is what he has come to do. Jesus is the absolute highest authority on this topic. If anyone knows anything about peace, it's him. So when Jesus talks about peace in the passage that we looked at today, we better be paying attention, right? Because it's like learning physics from Albert Einstein or being taught how to play tennis from Roger Federer. Jesus is the expert on peace. I don't know if these are the best examples, they're just examples that I found helpful for me, but you get what I mean. Jesus is the expert. He's the OG in peace, if you know what OG is. You can trust what he is saying. But more than that, Jesus is also the source of the peace that he brings. Verse 27, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you." Jesus is giving his own peace to the disciples. And it's not some vague hope of peace. It's not like a fuzzy sense or, some airy-fairy, everything's going to be all right type of peace. This is a true peace. And Jesus is doing this because he knows the disciples are going to need it in the days to come. Because the context of the passage that we looked at today, this is commonly called the farewell discourse. In John chapter 14 to 17, Jesus is talking to his disciples, and all of this is happening the night before his crucifixion. It's the night before he gets captured and everything that, that we talk about at Easter, he gets tried and, tortured and executed, essentially. All of this is happening a few hours before that happens. And all of this that's going to happen over the next 3 days, Jesus knows full well. Like, he's been preparing his disciples. He's been telling them, about the betrayal and, be ready for this. But the disciples really had no idea, or they didn't have a complete understanding of what was going to happen yet. The disciples had no idea the amount of pain, the amount of fear, the grief, the confusion, the doubt that they were about to face. So how amazing is it then that Jesus, having full knowledge of what's to come, knowing full well what's about to happen to him, his concern was for his disciples. You know, Jesus is about to be killed with one of the most horrific, most painful ways in history. And his focus is on preparing his followers, on his disciples. It's safe to say that if we were facing a similar situation, if you were about to be killed tomorrow, I think our concern would be desperately trying to, you know, find peace for ourselves. Trying to assure ourselves, you know, not really thinking about others. Only someone with a real and complete peace can act and behave this way. And this piece of the Bible, can only be described as supernatural in nature. It transcends our understanding of what peace is. And this peace can only come from God. And so when Jesus says he's giving his disciples his peace, it is the peace that he has with God that allows him to do this. So to help us gain a better understanding of what this complete peace from God looks like, and to appreciate the significance of what Jesus has promised to us, I've split this complete peace into three qualities that I think are quite useful. Oh, the formatting went funny. Oh, that's all right. So it's a Venn diagram, if you guys are familiar. Encompassing is the first quality. Enduring and everlasting. So, you know, these three qualities work together, and then the little like intersection point is kind of where I feel like this complete piece is. It has all of these qualities in it. So the first quality that I want to talk about is that this piece is encompassing. And what that means is that it impacts our lives in many, many ways. Because we realize that there are many areas in which we can desire peace. So Charles Spurgeon, the preacher, author person, has a sermon that he preached called The Jewel of Peace, where he compares peace to a gemstone because it has many faces or facets to it. And I think that's a pretty good metaphor for the peace that we see reflected in today's passage, and also for the wider vision of peace that we find in the Bible. You know, a lot of our focus today so far has been on the idea that peace is the absence of conflict between countries or groups that can result in war, or you know, the societal peace that we experience here in Australia being a comparatively safe country, you know, with low crime rate, with low violence rate. And while the vision of peace that we find in the Bible certainly does include a world where there is no conflict, no fighting, no war, there's no disharmony between peoples, ultimately the absence of these things alone is not a complete peace. You know, there is a day that is coming where all of this will stop, where there is no war and there is no fighting. And Jesus does promise this, but that is just one aspect of the peace that Jesus gives. And even in this regard, while we generally think that this type of peace on a global scale has increased throughout history, there's actually quite a lot of data that points to this not being the case, or at least not being the whole picture. The Peace Index report that I referred to earlier actually found that in the last 14 years, peacefulness across the world had actually fallen by 3.2%. And if we want to define war as active conflict that claims more than 1,000 lives, in the last 3,400 years of human history, the world has been at peace for only 268 of those years. So that's 8% of history, recorded history. And I think we only have to look at this year and what's happening between Russia and Ukraine to really see that peace is still very much lacking in other parts of the world. And this isn't even looking at the other areas in which people experience and search for peace. In the last few decades, there is an increasing focus on personal peace, inner peace, you know, whether it be with your relationships, with your family and friends, harmony in the home, or the pursuit of inner peace, you know, having peace in our hearts and in our minds. But if we look at some of the facts around this, especially in the context of what's happened during COVID, we can see that peace in these areas was also severely impacted and still quite elusive to us. There is still such a huge need for real lasting peace for so many people. So I've just Googled like some facts around mental health during COVID and also domestic violence during COVID. So these are just a couple of numbers or facts that I found that kind of paint a picture of, you know, over the last 3 years, and especially in that first year of COVID with quarantining and lockdowns and stuff, you know, this personal peace that a lot of people are looking for, or family peace, is actually like a struggle for a lot of people. And so when we experience this type of stuff, when we experience the opposite of peace or conflict in our lives, what we often do is we're trying to find peace from different things. So security and money, status or recognition from others. You know, we find peace or security from what we can achieve through relationships, friendships, having more material wealth or possessions, you know, practicing meditation, or, you know, if you're new agey, like, you know, aligning yourself with the universe, that type of thinking. But what these things point at really is that, you know, what the world tells us that if you want peace, if you want to find peace, you can find it through your own efforts. You know, you can do something to earn it. Through your own ability, you can achieve peace. But if that's really the case, and when our experience and perception of peace is so scattered, we come to realize how lacking these things really are. You know, none of these things will bring you peace and comfort to every part of your life. Because if we go back to the context of this passage, the disciples didn't know it yet, but they were about to be in a real need of peace. And the peace that they found or had in the world wasn't going to be enough for them. Not as the world gives, do I give to you. So Jesus' words here are speaking louder and louder. In that moment, Jesus had peace. You know, as the weight of the world's sin was bearing down on him, and he was facing death on a cross, he had peace. You know, it's not a peace that was gained from a world, but a peace, a perfect peace that he had with God the Father. And this is the real peace that washes away all those other worries that we have, all those other fears. You know, no matter what part of your life you are feeling that you are needing peace, stress from a job or from school, you know, feeling pressure from expectations. Maybe you're just feeling afraid about something or feeling uncertain, having doubts about something in your life. All of this, if you have peace with God, you will have peace with that thing too. That is the peace that Jesus gave to his disciples that night, you know, to prepare them for what was coming. As they grieve for Jesus, their friend and teacher, as confusion and uncertainty crept into their hearts, those disciples are wondering, what are we going to do now? As fear grew in them with the threat of persecution, Jesus' own peace, the peace that he had given to them, will not let their hearts be troubled or afraid. So the peace from Jesus and from God, it's peace over everything. Peace that encompasses everything. Yes. So the second quality of a complete peace is that it's enduring. The situation that the disciples were facing and what we too often face in life is not one in which we have control over these external circumstances that negatively affect our feelings of peacefulness. You know, those examples of worldly peace that I put up before, you know, finding security from material wealth, possessions, all of that stuff. Okay. All of these things work from the outside in. They are not rooted in our hearts. We have very little control over them. Rather, if you place your peace in those things have control over you. And when your circumstances change, these things that give you peace will lose their power. But the biblical idea of peace is not dependent on peaceful circumstances or feelings. I mean, it can certainly include that, but it's not only that. And in fact, when Jesus talks about peace, he talks about it in a sense that it somehow transcends our circumstances, because it's made very clear that our lives will not always be peaceful. One of my favorite verses in the Bible comes in John chapter 16, verse 33, which comes a bit later from what the passage was that we looked at. Jesus says to his disciples, I have said these things to you that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but take heart, I have overcome the world. Let's take a look at these two images, two visual representations of peace that I found. So this first image, this came up on Google Images when I searched peaceful scenery. Just from looking at it, it certainly does evoke, you know, a very peaceful thoughts, right? It's a calm, tranquil lake with lovely clear water, surrounded by green grass and trees, you know, a beautiful mountain range in the back, blue skies and nice fluffy white clouds. It's really relaxing to look at, and if you could like picture yourself in this environment, I think you could pretty easily feel that, you know, I'm feeling quite peaceful. The second image, this is a painting depicting Jesus and the disciples in a boat on the Sea of Galilee. This is before Jesus does the miracle of calming the storm. It's very different to that first image. You know, dark, stormy looking weather, waves crashing up the side of the boat, the winds are pulling at the sails, and you can definitely see the concern and fear on the faces of the disciples. You know, this guy in the back in purple, he's praying. And we know from, you know, biblical accounts that the disciples were saying, like, Lord, save us. You know, we're going to drown. There's a lot of fear that they were experiencing. And where is Jesus during all of this? He's asleep. I just find this image so funny because he looks like so chill. Like he looks like he fell asleep like watching TV and he's just like taking a nap. It's hard for us to comprehend, right? So like during this raging storm, Jesus was completely at peace. So peaceful that he's like sleeping like a baby. Jesus's peace is not dependent on outside forces. It's not dependent on nice weather or calm waters. His peace can't be broken by the circumstances that he is in. The verse in John says, in the world you will have tribulation. Jesus is very clear. In this world, in this life, you will still have tribulations. You will still face trials. It will not always be easy. The peace that Jesus gives is not a promise that our lives will be perfect, that we'll always be living in peaceful circumstances. He acknowledges that there will be times where we are challenged. In the book of Matthew, in chapter 24, verse 9, Jesus says to the disciples, then they will deliver you up to tribulation and put you to death, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. This is what he said to the disciples. doesn't sound very peaceful, does it? You know, trials and tribulations will come with life on earth. And Christians, in particular, should expect to be persecuted. Like the boat in the storm, in this image, we will always need to be ready to face trials. We will all face stormy weather. And that is why the promise of peace from Jesus is of a peace that endures through the toughest times that we will face. It is not fragile. It does not crumble when met with resistance. It's not found in good feelings or good thoughts, and not found in good health or a full bank account. As much as we think those things will help us, if Jesus' peace is strong and enduring, built upon the very foundation of Christ residing and ruling in our hearts. This is the type of peace that transcends our circumstances and endures the waves that will come crashing on us in life. So the third and last quality that I want to look at today quickly is that the peace we have through Jesus is everlasting. This one is hopefully quite self-explanatory. The peace that Jesus offers will not come to an end. It is not a temporary peace. It is not bound by the things of this earth or even bound by our time on this earth. If you attribute peace, or if you find peace in any of those other things that we talked about, you know, in money, on yourself, on anything in this world, those things will sooner or later fail you. You know, none of those things are guaranteed to remain forever. Even if you can hold on to those things in life, none of it you can take when you die. It is only the peace paid for by the sacrifice of Jesus that brings reconciliation between us and God. And it is this peace that carries us into an eternity with him beyond our earthly lives. And it is this same peace that Jesus had as he faced the cross that night. Knowing everything that was about to happen to him, he finished speaking to his disciples, and he went to the Garden of Gethsemane and he prayed. In Luke chapter 22, verse 42, it says, most of us know this, when Jesus prayed, "Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done." Jesus knew exactly what was coming to him and what was going to happen. And yet peace had not left him. Even as Jesus continued to pray in agony, it says, and his sweat became like great drops of blood, peace had not left him. Even for us as Christians, this can be hard to imagine, right? What does it mean to have such peace? Like, how can Jesus be knowingly, you know, going to his death and have that type of peace? Where does it come from? How does it work? So simply put, the peace that we can have through Jesus is the result of a reconciled relationship with God, which gives this peace the characteristics of God and also transforms it back into its original and intended form. So in Hebrew, the word for peace is shalom or shalom. And there's an American theologian, Neil Plantinga, I think. He defines this word as the webbing together of God, humans, and all creation in justice, fulfillment, and delight. We call it peace, but it means far more than mere peace of mind or a ceasefire between enemies. In the Bible, shalom means universal flourishing, wholeness, and delight. Shalom, in other words, is the way things ought to be. So this peace, or shalom, is the way in which God originally created the world. The imagery used to describe the Garden of Eden shows it was meant to be a place of peace, that everything was in harmony, everything worked together. It's not a passive peace, but it's a flourishing, you know, full of richness, fulfilling peace. So this is the world that we were created for. But when sin entered the world, this peace was disrupted. Sin is the force of disruption that breaks down the relationships between between us, like people, and also it severs the relationship between us and God. You know, the peace that was the world was originally intended for was broken. It is only through the coming of Jesus as the Prince of Peace, overcoming sin and death, which restores this peace. You see, we were always meant for peace. God created us to have peace with Him. You know, every type of peace that we've discussed today, peace between people, peace in ourselves, peace with the world, you know, no wars, no conflict, no fears, no worries. That's the peace that we were created for. And that is what everlasting means. You know, when we talk about everlasting, it's often looking, you know, into the future. It extends into eternity. And while this is true, the reverse is also true, because everlasting means it has always been. From the beginning, this peace was woven into the very fabric of creation. But it just took Jesus' coming to our world and paying for the price of sin to restore the peace that had been disrupted. And when Jesus returns again to fully restore us and raise the new heaven and earth, we will be there with Him in perfect peace. We will be there in shalom. So what we come back to, what we now have a better understanding of, is that true peace, you know, this completely transcendent peace, can't be earned. It can only be given. And on the night before His death, Jesus chose to give it to us. As He said goodbye to His disciples, He left them with His peace. His own peace He gave to them. It's a peace that He had through being in a completely right relationship with God the Father. A peace that He had through a perfect understanding of God's sovereignty, mercy, and love. It's a peace that is all-encompassing, peace that endures, a peace that lasts forever. That's what He gave to His disciples. And that's what He's given to us as well. So as we leave here today and go off into our weeks, no doubt it's going to be a busy one for all of us, with, you know, finishing things up at work, you know, preparations for Christmas next week. As we celebrate and remember the coming of Jesus, I want us to be reminded of why Jesus matters and what He came to do for us. You know, Jesus isn't just some guy who's from history. He's just some person who, you know, went around and did some teaching and, you know, said wise things. I'm sure we all understand at least that much. Jesus' life, death, and resurrection is a turning point in which all of eternity revolves. His coming into the world is the greatest act of love and sacrifice that can happen, and through it, He brought all that is good into the world. And through over the last few weeks, we've seen exactly what we can look forward to in Jesus. Oh, there we go. He gives us a living hope. He shows us a love perfected. He leaves us with a sustaining joy. And He offers us a complete peace. Peace that encompasses every aspect of our lives, endures through all our trials and tribulations, and is everlasting in its nature. This is the Jesus that we look forward to celebrating at Christmas.